WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Nursing homes in Virginia, including one in Harrisonburg, become a focus for the COVID-19 outbreak. State officials report the first death of an inmate, a woman at a Goochland prison, from COVID-19. Meanwhile, the virus has changed the business landscape, but local shops are adapting and even reaching out to help those in need. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, April 15th. The Virginia Department of Health reports 154 deaths now from COVID-19. Nearly 30% of all virus deaths in Virginia have been recorded at one suburban Richmond nursing home. Canterbury Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center reports 45 residents there have died from COVID-19. Statewide, there are now more than 6,100 confirmed cases. That includes 151 in Harrisonburg and Rockingham County and 86 in Charlottesville and Albemarle County. Meanwhile, the medical director for one nursing home in Harrisonburg says four residents there have tested positive. Dr. Jonathan Schenck, medical director for Accordius Health in Harrisonburg, confirmed to several news organizations that VDH is helping investigate the apparent outbreak there. He said 97 were being tested so far and 60 patients were showing COVID-19-like symptoms, but some of those cases could be the flu. The Virginia Department of Corrections reports the first death of an inmate from COVID-19. The 49-year-old woman was incarcerated at the Virginia Correctional Center for Women in Goochland. She was admitted to Virginia Commonwealth University Medical Center on April 4th and died Tuesday morning. The Department of Corrections says 44 inmates and 32 staff are infected with COVID-19 in correctional institutions in the Commonwealth. James Madison University says it may hold spring commencement in August. In a letter to students, President Jonathan Alger said that if public health conditions allow, JMU will hold commencement activities on August 7th and 8th. He also said JMU will host a virtual conferring of degrees for graduates to practice turning their tassels ahead of the in-person celebration in August. That virtual conferring of degrees on May 8th. Full disclosure, WMRA's operating license is held by JMU's Board of Visitors. Meanwhile, a student at Liberty University has filed a class action lawsuit accusing the school of refusing to refund student payments for room and board and other on-campus services that are not available due to the coronavirus pandemic. The complaint was filed in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Virginia. The lawsuit contends that keeping the university open was a financial decision so that Liberty could profit off of the pandemic. The university said it will fight back against a meritless lawsuit. During this pandemic, many healthcare providers are struggling financially. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Hausman explains why and what's being done to help doctors and nurses in the Commonwealth.
Doctors and nurses working in hospitals are especially busy battling the COVID-19 pandemic, but many family physicians are struggling, according to Dr. Sterling Ranson, past president of the Medical Society of Virginia.
The volume of patients through the office is what drives the revenue for most practices. Since COVID-19, volumes have gone down precipitously.
The same is true for many specialists.
They're not doing elective procedures in the hospital, and because of that, they don't have follow-ups in their office, and so their volume are down too.
Ranson's patients are still calling, but conversations by phone are reimbursed by insurance companies and government programs at a much lower rate than office visits.
They reimburse for video visits equal to how they reimburse us for a face-to-face visit, which is fantastic. The problem that I see is that a majority of my patients are older, and a lot of them have problems with the technology. We have to go to a phone visit.
Which is why dozens of medical associations, including the AMA and the Medical Society of Virginia, have written to the federal government requesting emergency payments equal to 1 month of revenue for their practices and a change in the way they're compensated for telephone visits. I'm Sandy Hausman.
Time now for the latest installment of our series from Sandy and Virginia Public Radio, answering listener questions about COVID-19. Here's part five.
This is the COVID-19 Minute, expert answers to your questions. Listener Janice Jakewith of Free Union, Virginia, has heard a lot about ventilators and wonders what risks are involved with this technology. At the University of Virginia, Dr. Tyson Bell explains that ventilators help us breathe, removing carbon dioxide and supplying oxygen to the body.
The oxygen concentration in the atmosphere is about 21% or so, and with a ventilator, we can reliably give 100%.
The ventilator is attached to a breathing tube that's inserted into the airway.
Most people have a lot of pain sensation when something goes into their throat. So frequently we have to give medicines to sedate the patient. And all that time when you're not active using your muscles and laying flat, that can lead to sometimes further complications.
Like blood clots or pneumonia. And the process of ventilation itself can cause lung damage. The hope is to give a patient's lungs time to recover, but early studies suggest at best only a third of patients put on ventilators get well. The rest remain on this breathing machine until they die, which is why he urges all of us to spell out our wishes in advance.
Not just because of COVID, but because lots of things can happen that could cause you to come into the hospital and need to have advanced care. It's always helpful for your physician and your nurses to know what you would have wanted beforehand so that we can make sure that we honor your wishes.
On a happier note, only 1 in 5 COVID patients will end up in the hospital, and most of those will not require intensive care and ventilation. I'm Sandy Houseman with the COVID-19 Minute.
Email your question to WMRA@JMU.edu. Be sure to type COVID question in the subject heading. Every April, hundreds of people flock to see the Saltwater Cowboys round up famous wild ponies for a biannual health check. But this year, in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, it will be different. Virginia Public Radio's Pamela D'Angelo reports.
Last week, Chincoteague National Wildlife Refuge announced the annual roundup would not be open to the public, so people wouldn't be tempted to congregate at the corrals. Denise Bowden is spokeswoman for the Chincoteague Volunteer Fire Department, which owns the herd of 160 ponies that live at the refuge. She said they had already been asking people to stay home.
You know, we're really asking for the crowds not to come, and we're really hoping that they will do the right thing and not come.
This year's health checks are particularly important as veterinarians are carefully monitoring the ponies to see if an experimental vaccine administered throughout last year is working. During the last 3 years, 8 wild ponies, all mares, had to be put down after suffering from a painful disease known as swamp cancer.
Knock on wood, counting our blessings, so far it seems to be doing really well. Now, we didn't have an extremely wet, rainy end of summer last year. So I'm thinking between that and the vaccine that, you know, we're on the right path here.
Pythium, the microorganism that causes swamp cancer, can be found all over the world, thriving in tropical and subtropical regions like the Gulf Coast. It's a disease of plants, too, and similar to the organism that caused the potato blight in Ireland in the 1800s. With climate change, it's moving north. Richard Hansen is a research veterinarian whose small Oklahoma-based company created treatments and the vaccine.
To me, the April 1 is a pivotal time in the health of these animals. You're boosting their immunity just before the season when they might be exposed to a lot of things. So we're cautiously optimistic that we're helping these herds.
Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, Hansen won't be traveling to this roundup. And 2 scientists who have been studying the organism at the refuge had to put their work on hold because their universities, like others, closed down as a precaution. The town of Chincoteague closed visitor accommodations like hotels, B&Bs, and restaurants in late March. Fortunately, the local veterinarian will be conducting the vaccinations and health checks as he always does. The volunteer fire department is also limiting participation of the saltwater cowboys who round up the ponies for their checkup. They will target about a dozen ponies that have yet to be inoculated. 5 foals were born over the winter, and more are on the way.
We're going to have a very slim crew, obviously because of the COVID-19, but we'll get it done. We've had to do this before with some other circumstances.
And there's one more update from the refuge, straight from the horse's mouth. Besides supplemental food, ponies like to tear up and munch on refuge grasses all day long. Overgrazing is a problem, says wildlife refuge biologist Kevin Holcomb.
The way they would, you know, pick the grass from the marshes, they'll go right down to very, very small stubble
So in February, a small team of AmeriCorps students replaced the old barbed wire fencing to allow grass to grow back, especially along the refuge shorelines that are eroding. And it will prevent accidental cuts to ponies, an entryway for that deadly microorganism.
I'm tickled to death that we're removing as much barbed wire as possible over there. What they used back in the old days, they had no idea what trouble it could cause in today's light.
From Chincoteague National Wildlife Refuge, I'm Pamela D'Angelo.
Finally today, COVID-19 has wildly changed the landscape of operations for small businesses. In the second part of her report, WMRA's Bridget Manley takes a look at how businesses in Harrisonburg have adapted to help customers and those in need.
Local business Farm Choice is a Harrisonburg staple that's been serving valley farmers and animal owners for 33 years. Owner Phil Liske built the business from the ground up. When it became clear that the COVID-19 pandemic was going to fundamentally change the way business operated, Liske knew he had to innovate quickly. Farm Choice is considered an essential business under Governor Northam's state of emergency. They provide food and nutrition to a range of animals and livestock. They knew they had to stay open, but they wanted to protect their customers and team members from getting sick.
We basically started with our road signage that we offer curb service as an option so that people that had concerns could call the store and give us their credit card over the phone, give us their order, and we'd have it on the porch. And when they arrive, we load it for them.
Liske says his group of 8 employees are thankful to be able to continue working as the national unemployment rate skyrockets to historic levels in the wake of the coronavirus. Liske is one of the many Valley small business owners who have had to drastically overhaul how they do business in the face of the pandemic. Andrea Dono is the executive director at Harrisonburg Downtown Renaissance, or HDR. She says businesses have had to embrace no-touch customer service and new ways of reaching customers to stay in business.
Everyone's trying to figure out how they can still try and engage with customers in some way. You know, knowing that people are looking for mostly a low or no-touch interaction, but a lot of folks in the area really do want to support small businesses. They just have different levels of comfort regarding what that could look like. So, you know, some businesses are doing a lot more online. Others that never did delivery before are doing it now.
Other small business owners decided not only to stay in business, but to pay it forward and help others going through difficult times. Tim Brady, one of the owners of Pale Fire Brewing, realized early during the stay-at-home order that the tap room had a lot of refrigerator and open-air space for a possible food pantry. He partnered with Cisco of Virginia, a food services company, Digital Minerva, a website design and marketing firm, and HDR to start Pale Fire Helps, a pop-up food bank for those affected in the local food service industry.
We ask that anybody in the restaurant industry or the food service industry just bring a pay stub or some way of showing that they're in the industry. Ideally, they bring a reusable bag, but if they don't have one, we've got bags on premise that they can use. And basically, they can come in. There's a wide variety of goods, and we just ask that they limit it to one bag of food per day. They can return, but you know, the idea is not to hoard. So if you grab a bag of food one day, come back the next day, grab another bag of food, you know, we just hope it makes a difference.
Brady said the partnership and program are so successful, other breweries across Virginia started their own Helps pantries in their communities, using Pale Fire Helps as the template. Other local business owners have also pivoted to help others in the community. Magpie Diner started Magpie and Friends Market, a drive-through pantry for those seeking food assistance. And Jeff Gwynn at the market is producing 3D face shields for Centara hospital workers and enlisting a team of makers around the country to help. Brian Schull is the Economic Development Director for the City of Harrisonburg. He says that small businesses need to continue to reach out to the Business Support Task Force that has been created to help local businesses.
Please try to hang in there. Know that we are here to try to help any way we can. It's going to take a concerted effort by all of us, so please try not to be overwhelmed. Reach out to different groups in the task force. We are all here trying to pull together and help where we can.
I think the underlying message is that despite all the things that we're going through, you know, in our own lives and watching what's happening in our community, there's a lot of people who are like, I'm going to do everything I can to find a way to bring us out of this. And whether it's working 15-hour days or, you know, writing a review for their favorite businesses, contributing to a GoFundMe, or designing and building or sewing masks. I mean, everyone's finding their niche to get through this. And that's the coolest thing, right?
For WMRA News, I'm Bridget Manley.
Full disclosure, Pale Fire Brewing sponsors programming on WMRA and is one of our Books and Brews partners. You'll find Bridget's report and yesterday's part one at WMRA.org and on the WMRA app. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Wednesday.